Thin air fallacy. There is a theory that fractional reserve banking inherently gives banks the ability to create money at no material cost. The theory does not depend on the state privilege of seigniorage. It is considered a consequence of the accounting practice of free banking. This is sometimes referred to as creating money ex nihilo, or out of thin air. Banks do not, as too many textbooks still suggest, take deposits for existing money from savers and lend it out to borrowers. They create credit and money ex nihilo, extending a loan to the borrower and simultaneously creating the borrower's money account. Lord Turner, chairman of the UK Financial Service Authority until its abolition in March 2013, Stockholm School of Economic Conference on Towards a Sustainable Financial System, September 12, 2013. Adherents describe two competing views on money creation. The traditional understanding is naive in relation to their more practical view, as implied by Lord Turner. The theory states that banking inherently creates not only credit, but also money. Naive view. Money is created by miners at the material cost, potentially sold to people, and eventually lent to people. This theory holds that the lender is lending only money he owns. As such, the lender is operating at full reserve and cannot engage in the practice of fractional reserve, which is considered fraudulent. As an honest lender, he is only able to issue claims, representative money, against money in his possession, preventing credit expansion and therefore persistent price inflation. Practical view. Money substitutes are created by banks at no material cost as a consequence of fractional reserve lending. The supply of these institutes expand with every loan, contradicting only as loans are settled. Given the implied lack of constraint on credit expansion, overall debt grows without bound, creating persistent price inflation. In a free market, people can perform the same operations as banks, without necessarily calling themselves banks. Therefore, the distinction between these two possibilities must be based on obscuration of the supposed fraud. The theory holds that this obscuration is accomplished using an accounting trick that is not widely understood. So let us investigate the difference. Any money will suffice in this investigation of the money substitutes created in either case, including gold, Bitcoin, or monopoly money. In the naive view, the potential lender has saved both the liquidity required for personal consumption, hoard, and the amount intended for earning interest, investment. All lending in this scenario originates from savings, such as gold accumulated from panning. Saving includes the sum of the hoard, money, and the amount that credit exceeds debt. Savings equals money plus credit minus debt. Money is gold, and credits are money substitutes. A person with 100-ounce savings has 100 ounces of money and 0 credit and 0 debt. In this view of personal lending, person hands over 81 ounce of gold to borrower, accepting an obligation to repay the person with interest at loan maturity. To simplify the accounting, we will still assume zero interest and no accounting, that is, discounting, for repayment risk. The person has 100 ounces of saving, 19 ounces of money, and 81 ounces of credit, with 0 ounces of debt. The borrower has 0 savings, 81 ounces of money, 0 ounces of credit, and 81 ounces of debt. Person has actually lent to his own enterprise, for example lending businesses, a fraction of his savings, which is accounted for below. Let us assume that person hoards 10% of his savings for the liquidity required for near-term consumption, and his business hoards 10% for the same reason. Person has 100 ounces of savings, 10 ounces of money, 90 ounces of credit, and 0 ounces of debt. The business has 0 ounces in savings, 9 ounces in money, 81 ounces in credit, and 90 ounces in debt. The borrower has 0 ounces of savings, 81 ounces of money. Person's business is operating with 10% reserve, as 90% of his deposited money is at risk of default. Projecting this into naive view of banking requires only renaming lender to depositor and business to bank. There is no need to assume that these are distinct individuals. By properly accounting for persons having money at risk, that is, a depositor, we can see that all lending is fractional reserved. There are two loans in the scenario reserved at 10%, resulting in monetary substitutes, credit, of 171% of money. Given the assumption of uniform time preference, borrower will lend 90% of his savings, as well as subsequent borrowers. Assuming a minimal practical loan of 1 ounce, after 43 loans, credit expansion terminates at 8.903 times the amount of money. Where R is the uniform level of individual reserves, and M is the amount of money, the total amount of credit, C, for any number of loans, N, is given by the following practical sum. C equals the sum of N equals 1 until N, of M times 1 minus R to the power of N. M times R minus 1 times 1 minus R to the power of N minus 1 divided by R equals 100 ounces times 10% minus 1 times 1 minus 10% to the power of 43 minus 1 divided by 10% equals 890.3 ounces. The reserve ratio, RR, is given by the rate of money to credit. RR equals M divided by C, equals 100 ounces divided by 890.3 ounces, equals roughly 11.3%. The money multiplier is given by the inverse of the reserve ratio. 1 divided by RR equals 1 divided by 100 ounces divided by 890.3 ounces, equals 8.903. It is only because a single dollar is considered the smallest lendable units that the series is limited to 43 iterations. A continuous function produces a money multiplier of 9 at 10% hoarding. Iteration yields the following table. See the book for a numbered list of 43 loans that start with 10 ounces hoarded, 90 ounces lent, and 90 ounces in credit, and that end out with 98.92 ounces hoarded, 1.08 ounces lent, and 890.30 ounces credited. Notice that, at full expansion, for any person to spend from his hoard while maintaining his time preference, a loan must be settled to offset the spending. The settlement process moves the money from the former borrower to its lender and cancels the note. The person in receipt of the spent money must lend it in order to satisfy his time preference, and so on. No further expansion is possible without an increase in the amount of money or an overall reduction in time preference. An increase in money increases the absolute amount of credit, and a reduction in time preference increases the proportion of credit to money. Given that money and credit evolve together, there is never any actual increase in money substitutes apart from these changes. In the typical practice of bank accounting, banks do not hand over the money. Instead, it creates account entries in a process referred to as credit creation. It creates offsetting ledger entries for depositors' proceeds and loan, credit and debt, and offsetting balance sheet entries for itself, assets and liabilities. At the time of loan issuance, the accounts are as followed. The savings of the depositors, the bank and the borrower. The depositor has 100 ounces of savings, 10 ounces of money, 90 ounces of credit, 0 ounces of debt, 100 ounces of assets, and 0 ounces of liability. The bank has 0 ounces of savings, 90 ounces of money, 81 ounces of credit, 171 ounces of debt, 171 ounces of assets, and 171 ounces of liability. The borrower has 0 ounces of savings, 0 ounces of money, 81 ounces of credit, 81 ounces of debt, 81 ounces of assets, and 81 ounces of liability. This is where explanations of the theory tend to terminate. The offsetting accounts of both bank and borrower balance, but borrower has 81 ounces of gold to spend, and bank has not had to return over any gold to borrower. There is still only 100 ounces of money, but borrower has 81 ounces of money substitute and bank has 81 ounces more in assets. The theory proclaims that bank has thus created not only credit, but also money. Notice that everything still balances and all accounts can be settled, seemingly validating the theory as espoused by Lord Tudor that they create credit and money ex nihilo, extending a loan to the borrower and simultaneously crediting the borrower's money account. This, however, demonstrates no actual spending of either the loan credit or the bank asset. Let us take this a bit further by assuming borrower clears his account and therefore the corresponding bank asset and liability entries. The depositor has 100 ounces of saving, 10 ounces of money, 90 ounces of credit, 0 ounces of debt, 100 ounces of assets, and 0 ounces of liability. The bank has 0 ounces of savings, 9 ounces of money, 81 ounces of credit, 90 ounces of debt, 90 ounces of assets, and 90 ounces of liability. The borrower has 0 ounces savings, 81 ounces money, 0 ounces credit, 81 ounces debt, 81 ounces assets, and 81 ounces liability. Notice that this is identical to the outcome of the naive view. There is no distinction between these supposedly competing views of money creation, invalidating the theory. This resolves the century-old debate, apparently begun between Plato and Aristotle, regarding whether money is based on mining or credit. The theories are identical, as money and credit are a duality. According to Joseph Schumpeter, the first known advocate of a credit theory of money was Plato. Schumpeter described metallism as the other of two fundamental theories of money, saying the first known advocates of metallism was Aristotle. Adherents of the two theories are merely talking past each other. Bitcoin as fiat, that is, non-use value money, without state support, has finally made observable both the logical errors of metallism, which attempt to show the necessity of use value to money, and chartalism, which attempt to show the necessity of state support to fiat. Recall that each loan is reserved at 10%, so bank can lend up 8.903 times the amount of money on reserve, or 890 ounces of money substitute against 100 ounces of money reserved. If bank reserves each loan at 0%, credit expansion would be infinite. However, this implies zero time preference, or the idea that time has no value, implying that all money is lent indefinitely. In the case of bank, 0% reserve implies no liquidity to satisfy any withdrawal, that is, immediate failure. Yet given zero time preference, there could never be any withdrawals, making this scenario irrelevant. Credit expansion is necessarily finite. So let us revisit the scenario where banking creates credit at negative reserve, that is, out of thin air. This time, considering spending, for example, on deposits of 0 ounces, bank intends to issue a loan of 1,000 ounces. Instead of relying on reserve money to eventually settle the loan, bank creates money on its balance sheet. Bank then increases borrower's credit and debt accounts, representing the borrowed money and the obligation to repay respectively. The bank has 0 ounces savings, 0 ounces of money, 1,000 ounces of credit, 1,000 ounces of debt, 1,000 ounces of assets, and 1,000 ounces of liability. The borrower has 0 ounces savings, 0 ounces money, 1,000 ounces credit, 1,000 ounces debt, 1,000 ounces asset, and 1,000 ounces liability. When borrower trades 1 ounce from his credit account for a car, his credit account is decreased by 1 ounce and merchant's increased by 1 ounce. Note that borrower now owes bank 1 ounce as anticipated by the loan agreement. The bank has 0 ounces saving, 0 ounces money, 1,000 ounces credit, 1,000 ounces debt, 1,000 ounces assets, 1,000 ounces liabilities. The borrower has minus 1 ounce of savings, 0 ounces of money, 999 ounces of credit, 1,000 ounces of debt, 999 ounces of assets, and 1,000 ounces of liability. The merchant has 1 ounce of savings, 0 ounces of money, 1 ounce of credit, 0 ounces of debt, 1 ounce of asset, and 0 ounces of liability. All looks good until merchant attempts to withdraw from his account. At this point, bank has defaulted and merchant is unpaid. If merchant's account is with another bank, the payment fails as soon as the two banks attempt to settle accounts. With a hypothetical negative reserve, the accounts balance as follows, indicating bank's demise, negative money. Bank has minus 1 ounce of savings, minus 1 ounce of money, 1,000 ounces of credit, 999 ounces of debt, 999 ounces of assets, and 999 ounces of liabilities. The borrower has 0 ounces savings, 0 ounces money, 999 ounces of credit, 1,000 ounces of debt, 999 ounces of assets, and 1,000 ounces of liability. The merchant has 1 ounce in savings, 1 ounce of money, 0 ounces credit, 0 ounces in debt, 1 ounce in assets, and 0 ounces liability. The money must actually be moved from the control of bank to merchant or merchant's bank, which is not possible. A simple example is the failure of an attempt by borrower to withdraw from his account. Bank may create as much money substitute as it wants, but negative reserves is just an empty promise. In this example, bank has created 1,000 ounces of promises that it cannot keep. The failure is to recognize these principles likely result from failure to consider the settlement process. This likely stems from the failure to recognize the inherent duality of money and credit, as the former must always exist to settle the claims implied by the latter. This likely stems from the habit of referring to money, for example gold, in the same terms as money substitutes, for example credits for gold. The offsetting asset and liability entries served only to account for loans issued and outstanding, which are the basis of bank's balance sheet. Bank similarly did not create the offsetting credit and debt entries to obscure fraudulent money creation. Bank created these accounts for two reasons. Preclude physical transfer just to redeposit the money into bank. Encourage redeposit into bank as opposed to a competitor or borrower hoard. When bank has insufficient reserve to satisfy withdrawals, either due to loans in default or a bank run, it has only two options, default or borrow. To prevent the former, central banking exists to provide the latter. This is the meaning of the term lender of last resort. State banking principle provides a detailed explanation of this actual source of monetary inflation. In summary, it has been shown that banks have no ability to create money. Fractional reserve is inherent in lending. The fraction of reserve is an expression of time preference. Zero reserves eliminates any chance of being able to settle accounts. No distinction exists between naive and practical theories of money creation.